Talking History with Patrick Gagan.
Thanks to Group Travel International, offering World War One and Two battlefield history tours.
The Irish Hospital Sweepstake, initially established to provide money for cash-strapped voluntary hospitals in Dublin, provided funding for Irish hospitals for over 50 years. Apart from its role in bringing millions of pounds of foreign currency into Ireland to build new hospitals and provide employment, it also contributed to the development of Irish advertising and broadcasting, horse racing, the growth of Irish business, and commercial sponsorship of sport. But that was not the whole story. In a brilliant new book, Marie Coleman digs deep into the murkier side of the Irish sweep. She successfully reveals scandals, skullduggery, and gangsterism, which all play their part in the sweepstakes, and she exposes its shortcomings and explores the extent to which these failings ultimately damaged the Irish health services by postponing necessary reforms. It's an extraordinary read. It's called The Irish Sweep, A History of the Irish Hospital Sweepstake, 1930 to 1987. It's published by UCD Press and is available in hardback and paperback. The paperback version is €28. And it's such an important book that we decided to bring back our 20th century Irish history expert, Dr. Lindsay Erner Byrne, to conduct the interview. And when she talked to Marie earlier in the week, she began by asking, what were the sweepstakes?
Well, I suppose for a younger generation, the best way to describe them would be as the forerunner to the modern Irish National Lottery. The main difference being that while the lottery funds a variety of sporting and other institutions, the money which accrued from the Irish Hospital Sweepstakes was, as the title suggests, used primarily to fund the building and equipping of Irish hospitals. Unlike the lottery as well, while the lottery is a weekly draw, the sweepstakes were held about three times a year. And the result of the sweepstakes, the prize that you won, depended on where horses came in certain horse races. They were usually run on three of the big English races, the Epsom Derby and the Aintree Grand National, which would, of course, be some of the best-known horse races in the world. Briefly, to describe how it worked, you bought a ticket in the sweepstake. A draw was held before the race, so your ticket was drawn, and it coincided with the name of a horse. Where that horse was placed in the race depended then on what prize you won. So it's slightly more complicated than the lottery, but I hope that...
that's a very interesting explanation.
Well,
I mean, it must have been very exciting then. If it was only done three times a year, was there a lot of pomp and ceremony surrounding the draws?
Oh yes, very definitely. And that's particularly the case in the first decade during which the sweepstake operated in the 1930s. Draws for the sweepstake in the 1930s could last for anything up to 3 or 4 days. They were often held in the Mansion House in Dublin before the purpose-built sweepstake building was built in Balls Bridge, and they attracted a very wide audience. They're similar to, I don't know, maybe the St. Patrick's Day parade celebrations, because the way in which the draw was held, the sweepstake, before they moved to Balls Bridge, had their offices in Earlsford Terrace. And there was a very big parade of counterfoils through the streets of Dublin, going between Earlsford Terrace and the Mansion House. And there was also a theme surrounding each sweepstake. The theme could be luck, or the theme could be aviation, the theme could be Ireland. The luck theme is a very interesting one, because for that, the room in which the draw was held was painted with symbols representing luck, and when the tickets were being transferred from Earlsford Terrace through to the Mansion House, a giant black cat had been designed by the artist John Keating was used to transport the tickets through Dublin. So you've got very much a sense of festival, I suppose, surrounding the sweepstakes. And there is one photograph of that in the sweeps, which if your listeners get a chance to look at the book, they'll see a photograph of the tickets parading through Dublin, and I think it'll give them some sense of what I'm talking about.
And indeed the cover does. You've got this line of nurses holding up the tickets in the air, I think, on the cover, which gives you another idea of just the degree of pageantry and spectacle that went with it.
Yes, and I think people who would remember the sweep draw, which in later years would have been televised, would have that image of the nurses drawing the tickets from the drum and then holding the ticket up in the air. And the front cover, as you say, illustrates that very well.
That's the image that I have anyway in my mind. So when I saw it on the cover, it sort of reminded me. We could do with one of those for the HSE now, another lottery where we can pull out some money out of the bag.
That's true.
How endeavour not to be done. So tell us about some of the more colourful prize winners then, the people that sort of won these sums of money. What sort of sums of money did they win?
Well, initially, at the start of the sweepstakes, you're talking about very large prizes. The biggest prize ever given out was given out in the second sweepstakes for the 1931 Grand National. That prize amounted to over £350,000, which, as you can imagine, in 1930s money is a very substantial amount of money. I think it would equate to something like €20 million in today's money. And that prize was won by an Italian immigrant called Emilio Scala, who lived in London at the time. He had emigrated from Italy to London, where he worked as an ice cream parlour salesman. He ran an ice cream parlour in Battersea. And he held this ticket along with a number of fellow Italians living in London. That wasn't uncommon at the time. Sweepstakes tickets cost 10 shillings, which was a considerable amount of money in the 1930s. So it wasn't unusual for a group of friends to get together and buy shares in one single ticket. And this appears to have been what happened in this case. And when Scala won his prize, he was immediately sued by a number of his friends who claimed that they had an entitlement to part of the prize as well. And this subsequently turned into a very sensational court case in the Irish courts, which I outline in quite a bit of detail in the book. Although in the end, Scala ended up winning his court case, though he didn't impress the judges in the Irish High Court very much. But on the basis of the money that he won, he went on to live a very lavish and well-off lifestyle in England for the rest of his life.
And actually, that raises another issue. I presume then non-nationals that could buy the ticket. It wasn't just people resident in Ireland. It was bought outside Ireland, these tickets.
Yes, indeed. And that was one of the most controversial aspects of the entire enterprise. If you think about the population of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland particularly, in the period we're looking at, you're talking about around 3 million people. That isn't going to generate enough money to build and equip hospitals. So the overwhelming majority of tickets were sold outside Ireland. In the early years of the sweepstake, in the early 1930s, anything up to three quarters of sweepstake tickets were sold in Great Britain. And this is a time, the early 1930s is a time like today of severe hardship on the international front, and the British government was less than pleased at the amount of money which was leaving Britain to build Irish hospitals. So they took action in 1934 and passed legislation to prohibit the advertisement of the Irish sweepstake in Britain. And this did cut very substantially into the profits of the sweepstake. So the promoters of the sweepstake then switched their attentions to North America. And from that point onwards, until the sweep began to decline in the late 60s and early 70s, the majority of tickets were sold in the United States and also in Canada.
It was quite an ingenious idea, Marie. Was this unique to Ireland, this idea? Because it seems to me to have been really novel.
Certainly it was the most famous of these style of sweepstakes of the time. Sweepstakes had been popular in Ireland before 1930. It's not just something they think up on the spot in 1930. Sweepstakes had been used throughout the 1920s to raise funds for a variety of charities, including hospitals. And the man who set up the Irish sweepstakes, a Dublin bookmaker called Richard Duggan, had been quite prominent in organising sweepstakes for charitable purposes throughout the 1920s. So the hospital sweepstakes draws on a tradition of using sweepstakes as a form of gambling to raise funds for charitable purposes in Ireland. There are a number of other international sweepstakes. The Stock Exchange in London ran a small sweepstake. The Calcutta Turf Club in India ran a small sweepstake. But when the Irish sweep came along in 1930, it just blew these smaller sweepstakes out of the water completely.
And what about fraud, Marie? Was there any fraud and skullduggery behind all of this? Much money involved.
Yes, there was. There was a considerable amount of fraud and skullduggery. If you think about what I've just said about the destination for sales of sweepstake tickets. Up until the 1960s, gambling was illegal in most parts of the United States, and that was also the case for Great Britain. If you even think of more modern times, Great Britain, the United Kingdom, was one of the last parts of the European Union to introduce a national lottery. So there is a very strong opposition to gambling in these countries during the time in which the Irish sweepstake operated. So the Irish sweepstake had to get around very stringent restrictions on gambling in these countries. To do that, tickets had to be smuggled out of Ireland into Great Britain, and then once they were smuggled into the English ports like Liverpool, they had to be subsequently smuggled into the eastern United States and distributed there. So they had to go through barriers of customs and police in Britain, customs, police, post office officials in the US also. So a considerable amount of money had to be expended in bribes to basically pay these people off to make sure they turned a blind eye to the illegal activities of the Irish sweepstake.
And finally, I suppose, Marie, the question I should ask, given what's in the title, how beneficial was this to the building and the health service and the hospitals of the time?
Yes, that's, I think, one of the things that motivated me to write this book, and it's one of the questions I wanted to answer. I think, undoubtedly, in the immediate term, it was hugely significant. The sweepstake was set up for the purpose of keeping the Dublin Voluntary Hospitals going in 1930. The specific hospital in most need of help was the National Maternity Hospital in Hollis Street, which in 1929 was on the verge of closure. The Free State government at the time was not in a position financially to fund the hospitals, and also the tradition of voluntary control of hospitals did not sit well with state funding. Neither the state wanted to fund it, nor the hospitals themselves. They did not want that level of state control that would have gone with state funding. So what you see, you go suddenly from a situation in the late 1920s where some of these Dublin voluntary hospitals are on the verge of closure. By the middle of the 1930s, if we just take the example of the National Maternity Hospital, it has been extended, it has been rebuilt, it is one of the highest tech hospitals in Europe at the time. So yes, in the immediate term, there's a very significant impact on Irish hospitals. When Fianna Fáil came to power in 1933, then they used the substantial amounts of money coming into the sweepstake to build what would now be the modern county hospital system in Ireland. By the later period, by the 1960s and the 1970s, the sweepstake is no longer as useful for funding hospitals. It's not bringing in as much money, and also the amount of money required to fund hospitals in this period
has hugely increased.
Is very substantial, and the sweepstake cannot meet that. But certainly, in its first decade of operation, it is the most important source of funding for Irish hospitals.
And helped state through a very tricky time indeed. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Marie Coleman, for coming in to talk to us about your new book, The Irish Sweep, A History of the Irish Hospital Sweepstake, 1930 to 1987, which is published very nicely, I must say, by UCD Press. And it's really fascinating on loads of levels. And there might be some salient points that the current government could take from having a read of it, Marie. Thank you very much for joining us. Coming up after these, there's more Talking History.
Talking History with Patrick Gagan.
Thanks to Group Travel International, Ireland's leading battlefield and history tour specialist.
On News Talk 106 to 108.